Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and glad to have you listening. Last month, Kosovo declared independence from Serbia. As far as Serbia is concerned, Kosovo has always been, and I expect if you ask most part Serbian. It is estimated that something like 90% of the population of Kosovo are ethnic Albanians. It is also home to an estimated 120,000 ethnic Serbs. More than 20 countries have recognized the independent Kosovo, among them the United States. However, many others have not. Certainly Serbia has not, and Russia has not. There is a concern that this situation is set up for violence, perhaps the kind of violence that took place between the Kosovar Albanians and the Kosovar Serbs back in the late 1990s. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about the newly independent Kosovo. And our guest for the show is John Menzies. He is Dean of the Whitehead School of Diplomacy and International Relations at Seton Hall University. He is also a former Foreign Service member. He was chief of mission at the U.S. office in Kosovo and also served as the U.S. ambassador to Bosnia-Herzegovina from January 7th through December 15th of 1996. He's joining us this morning by telephone, and we appreciate him spending some time with us. Questions, of course, from people who are listening are welcome. The only thing we ask of callers is that people try to keep their comments brief so that we can keep moving along and get in as many different callers as possible, but certainly, callers are welcome. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Again, 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. That may or may not make it any easier for you to dial, but certainly, if you want to join the conversation, you are welcome to do that. Ambassador Menzies, hello.
Hello, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, we appreciate very much you giving us some of your time. What I'd like to do, perhaps you could talk a little bit about how it is we got to this point. There has been, for some time now, an independence movement in Kosovo, and there also was this effort under the auspices of the United Nations to try to work out some kind of an agreement that would make it possible for everybody to sign on to, and perhaps that was just an impossible task. It seemed that those people in Kosovo who were interested in independence just got impatient, and they unilaterally declared, and that's how it got us to this point. Can you talk a little bit about what had been going on diplomatically to try to perhaps prevent us from getting to the point where we are now?
The history is very long and complex, and one could trace it back centuries if we chose to. But the real events began when the Constitution of Yugoslavia, which gave Kosovo autonomy, was revoked. The autonomy was revoked in the late 80s. Albanians were displaced from public service jobs, and it started a cascade of events that brought us to the current problem. The Kosovars, during the period of repression under the law at the time, created the world's largest NGO in one sense. They created parallel institutions that met the needs of the roughly 90% of the population that were excluded from the school system, excluded from the healthcare system, and all of the different government services that would make up a social service network. They created the world's largest NGO. They began a system of international taxation of the diaspora of Albanians as the process developed from 1 year to 5 to 10. And then in the late 90s, violence broke out. The Albanians, who had been very pacifist in their approach, began to tire of the process. And the Serb repression continued and grew worse in response to events on the ground. At the height of the conflict, 3 out of every 4 people, 3/4 of the population, were forced from their homes, either as refugees or as internally displaced persons. At that point, this was during the peak of the NATO bombing which was designed to stop the repression. And eventually the Serbs agreed to withdraw and agreed to a UN mandate. And that brought us up to the most recent discussion.
And it has, and the UN has been administering Kosovo since 1999.
That's right? Correct.
That's right. Would it have been possible, I suppose, as far as the United Nations perhaps were concerned and a lot of the rest of the world was concerned, the ideal situation would be to put together an arrangement between Kosovo and the Albanian Kosovars and the rest of Serbia that would keep Kosovo part of Serbia but have it be a semi-autonomous region, essentially. That would have been, I suppose, the thing you could have hoped for that would have given everybody something, but certainly not the two sides perhaps wouldn't get what they exactly wanted. But was there ever any hope that that would happen, particularly as far as the Kosovar Albanians were concerned?
No, there was never a prayer. Remember that autonomy was given to them under the 1974 Constitution and then withdrawn. And the repression began in earnest after the withdrawal of autonomy. So autonomy would not be enough. Remember that the displacement of 75% of the population equals genocide. The effort to extirpate a culture or remove it from a geographical region, slaughter is only one manifestation of that. It's the effort to remove a culture, and that's what took place. After genocide has been committed, it is virtually impossible for the government to assert sovereignty over that territory. And we've seen that elsewhere in the world, most notably after the Second World War, as borders shifted after the Second World War that had no basis in history, but a very clear basis in the actions of the various parties during the war. But there was never a chance of that working out. Independence was the only thing that was acceptable to the vast majority of Kosovars, the 90%. That form the majority, the Albanian vast majority, and it's one of the most ethnically homogeneous regions in Europe. We want to keep it diverse. The government of Kosovo wants to keep the region diverse, but there are forces that are trying to make it more homogeneous still, and that's not where any of us want it to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, it does seem to be the case that it is, well, most of the population is ethnically Albanian. There is this about 10% that is ethnic Serb, and that they're not evenly distributed throughout Kosovo. That more than half of them, or perhaps about half of them, live in the extreme northern part. There are pockets around Pristina and in the south. So it's not as if we have a lot of places where Albanians and Serbs are living next door to one another.
That's not always been the case. It was far more diverse by region before the conflict, of course, and there was a good deal of ethnic cleansing, especially in the north, where many Albanians were forced out of northern Mitrovica into the south part of the town, and there was an effort to create a Serb region in the north. Curiously enough, the Serb government of the government of Serbia has very little interest in the fate of the Serbs in the south, who are more dispersed among the ethnic Albanian population and are in smaller groups. They seem to focus mainly on the north, looking to that area as the basis for the Serb population to continue. But their lack of interest in other Serb areas is conspicuous.
Is there a possibility, it seems like one of the things that people worry about is that there would be a forced migration, that is the Albanian, Kosovar Albanians, would force the Serbs, those people who are living elsewhere around the country, particularly in this area in the south, would force them to relocate to this area where already there's a big concentration of Serbs in the north?
That is certainly not the intent of the government of Kosovo. They have expressed explicitly their intent to make it possible for the Serbs to live anywhere, for people to return, and their desire to keep their neighborhoods diverse, all of them. And they've said that. I believe they mean it. I saw this phenomenon take place in Sarajevo in Bosnia after the conflict ended there, when the new lines were drawn for control. There was a good deal of self-ethnic cleansing from Sarajevo, where Serbs forced other Serbs to leave with them. And we may see some of that taking place. That's a tragedy beyond measure for that to happen, for people who want to stay to be forced out by people of their own ethnic group. And I believe that the government of Kosovo does not want to see that happen. They're not into the business of ethnic cleansing and genocide.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is John Menzies. He's dean of the Whitehead School of Diplomacy and International Relations at Seton Hall University. He is also former U.S. ambassador to Bosnia-Herzegovina. He served there for most of the year 1996. He was also chief of mission at the U.S. office in Kosovo. And he's joining us this morning by telephone, talking about what's happening now in Kosovo and the Declaration of Independence there in Kosovo that happened around the middle of February. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. It seems that we have a significant problem here in that when Kosovo declared independence, we had a number of countries, and I believe now that there are more than 30 that
yes.
have recognized it, and they do include the United States and Britain and France and Germany. But most of the rest of the world, it seems, is hanging back. And not that they have said that they oppose Kosovar independence. A couple have had. Certainly Serbia has and Russia has. But there seems to be most of the rest of the world hasn't wanted to take a position on this one way or another. So that if you have most of the world declining to recognize this independent Kosovo, even if the U.S., Britain, France, and Germany do, where exactly does that leave us? Where does that leave the United Nations? Where does that leave Kosovo?
Well, it's not just a question of numbers. It's a question of the nations that do recognize, and the nations you've listed, plus many other allies, members of NATO, and people within the region who have recognized Kosovo. It's the composition of the group that recognizes that matters even more than the numbers. And Kosovo starts with a huge and important base for recognition in the countries you've listed, plus all of the other 30 that have recognized already. Others are considering and will take action in the next months. And most will fall in line eventually and recognize Kosovo. I think they're in a very good position. They've got the most important endorsements for their independence. Others will follow, and the world will get used to this idea. Over time, I believe, even Serbia will get used to the idea. They claim they won't, but over time they will. And I believe that even Russia will get used to the idea as well and come around. I need to say right here that Russia's sustained in all of this an enormous diplomatic defeat. Perhaps I shouldn't call attention to it. We're very careful not to say too much about it because we don't want to underscore that fact too heavily. We're trying to work with Russia in so many parts of the world constructively, but this was a diplomatic area where I just don't think their policies have panned out.
Mm. Well, and I would certainly think that in terms of the potential recognition of the independent Kosovo by the United Nations, that opposition from Russia would be a significant problem, perhaps also opposition from China, if for no other reason than they have this permanent position on the Security Council and are in a position to veto anything that the United Nations comes up with. If the Russians continue to want to be obstructionist on this, isn't that a problem?
Well, it is for UN membership, certainly, but that's not the only measure of a country's independence. Will they have access to the international monetary organizations, the IMF, the IBRD, and different international organizations that they need to be involved with? Will they have access to sovereign credit? Will they be able to undertake debt? Will they be able to invite people with confidence to come and invest in the area and do business with Kosovo. I think they'll be able to do all of those things.
It's certainly countries like Russia, and there are others, where they have separatist movements. This kind of thing is a concern. At least as I read it, that's the reason that the Russians and the Chinese would be concerned, as well as people in Cyprus, Turkey and Greece, Spain, China, a lot of other places. They would, I think, not like the precedent that this would set. If, for example, Serbia said, fine, we accept this, would that be okay with Russia, or would the Russians still have reason to say we really don't support this and don't want to acknowledge it?
Well, I think that those are legitimate concerns, by the way, that people would be afraid that this is viewed as a template for other separatist movements across the globe. But remember that Kosovo is a unique set of circumstances. I underscore the importance of ethnic cleansing and genocide. 75% of the people forced from their homes. You will find that no other region of the world that is currently a major concern to, say, China or Russia or other of key friends of ours has that background. If they're willing to acknowledge, for example, that they've committed genocide or inflicted genocide on some of those regions, then they should be concerned, but not for this example alone. The point is, we recognize this as a unique set of circumstances, and we hope that others will too. We know the difference between Kosovo and Chechnya, or Ossetia, or Abkhazia, or the many other areas of concern to our friends. We don't want them to be alarmed by this. We've constantly tried to reassure them that we know that Kosovo is a one-off. It happens because of the particular set of circumstances in the area and the particular actions that took place there. So we try to reassure people of that, but some will not be reassured. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's not in the interests of some of the separatist groups to understand that point either. They would rather see themselves as fitting the mold of Kosovo, but there is no mold. They may try as they will, and they may have legitimate grievances, but they cannot look to Kosovo as an example for them to follow.
And I suppose some people have made this argument that also another way to look at this is this is really the last chapter in the coming apart of Yugoslavia, and that for that reason it's different from an area that is part of an existing country saying, well, we simply want to go our own way now.
Right. Absolutely. We think that this is part of the series of conflicts that followed the breakup of Yugoslavia or constituted the breakup of Yugoslavia, a tragic series of events. But, you know, the aspirations of different groups could not be stifled forever there.
For the Serbs, this whole business of their relationship with Kosovo and what they think about this independence is complicated by their interest in forging a closer relationship with the rest of Europe. And Serbia apparently has interest in joining the EU or at least becoming closer to Europe. And now here we have a situation where some of the most powerful members of the EU have said that they accept Kosovo independence, and that complicates that complicates the interest of the Serbs in becoming closer to Europe. And in fact, that seems to have led to a collapse of the Serb, this whole business, that both of these things together, and perhaps there are other things as well, seems to have led to a collapse of the Serb government. Is it likely, do you think, that the Serbs, if they really are interested in closer ties with Europe, are simply going to have to accept the independent Kosovo in the process? Or, in fact, do you think that's something that they're... Well, I think you said eventually you thought that they actually would. That may take some time, though, I expect.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to hasten to add that I don't envy any politician in Belgrade the position that they face. No one wants to be the one to say that we've lost Kosovo. That's political suicide, and so we have to help in some ways the forces in Belgrade to find a solution to this that will not destroy them politically or physically. Heaven knows what's possible. We've seen violence there recently, But I think we need to help them find a solution to this too. There are certainly centrifugal and centrifugal elements within the government in Belgrade. Some want to get closer to Europe, some want to move further away. And the ones who want to move further away are the ones looking most particularly toward Russia right now, who would rather form new alliances there and back away from the European Union and NATO. They've already been a part of Partnership for Peace, as I recall, and that's sort of a on the doorstep of NATO. Many people in Belgrade and in Serbia are backing away from Europe. This is a very bad trend, and it's recidivist. It's regressive. It's not going to help them. If they want to move closer to Russia, they're going the wrong direction in terms of political geography. That's not where they want to be. The European Union is where their future needs to lie. And so we have to work with the people of Belgrade to find new messages that they can convey that are good. For example, the government in Belgrade, rather than saber-rattling and saying Kosovo forever and always is part of Serbia, they should be saying to the Serbs of Kosovo, we support you, we stand with you, we want to make your life possible in Kosovo, we don't want you to leave. We want you to be granted all of the rights of a citizen of Kosovo. We want to assure that, and we'll work with the international community and with anyone that stands for those principles. They're unable to say that for a variety of reasons right now, but that's the right message to say rather than the one that says, by golly, we're going to partition the place or we're going to reassert our sovereignty over it all. That's not going anywhere. It will take them time for the wounds to heal. They have to because the sovereignty is not coming back. Partition will not be tolerated. It just won't work, and they need to get over it. This divorce is final. And we've got to work very carefully with them and cautiously with them to moderate and to calibrate the message that they send. But they've got to back off of the militant messages which they're sending right now, which are in no one's interest, least of all the Serbs that are in Kosovo. And my heart goes out to them because they have been so abused by their nominal sponsors in Belgrade who use them as a political football. It's atrocious that they're being so abused by their own kinsmen and friends.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580, John Menzies, he's dean of the Whitehead School of Diplomacy and International Relations at Seton Hall University. He served as the U.S. ambassador to Bosnia-Herzegovina in 1996, basically for most of the year between January 7th and December 15th. We're talking about Kosovo, and your questions are welcome. We have someone here ready to go. Others certainly can call in, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Caller here is in Effingham, line number 4, or toll-free line. Hello.
Yes. Perhaps you can define from just the last couple of statements you made, what then is the outcome after all this has died down and the participants, Kosovo, and I remember some young man when all this was blew up the first time, that he didn't care if it took 50 years that Kosovo would be free. Okay, well then, what does that freedom mean in relationship to what is ahead? Who is going to oversee the economy of these little places? Who is going to sell the natural resources contained within them, if there is any? And how will the public finally at large be affected by this? An example is the U.S. today. What has happened in the U.S.? Now we have war, we have economic collapse, we have huge amounts of the population who participate in nothing except the day-to-day living on food stamps and other things that have been put in place to avoid revolution. And how is that going to play out in these tiny little countries who, you know, the old man that founded Yugoslavia tried to address those problems. His name escapes me just now. But
Tito?
Yeah, just, what did you say, sir?
Tito.
Yes, Marshal Tito. Well, and then supposedly taken over, he tried to be independent from the Soviet Union and all that. But nevertheless, how is this going to play out? Are the poor remain poor? The rich become rich again? And even in the United States, when the move to push out or buy out, however it occurred, the Spanish and the French and the Native Americans and all that that meant. And what is the bottom line? Here's the U.S. at the top, so they say, and we have all this desperation within the nation.
Well, let me start from an odd angle. You mentioned economic collapse at home. I would just observe that I think that is utterly untrue. I think if you canvass businesses across the country, you will find that they are actually pretty flush hiring people and looking for more. In the financial markets, it's a different story, and a lot of people take their lead from those markets inappropriately. But business is still strong. We're not facing a recession, and I think that is probably an illusion. As an observer from this vantage point. Anyway, looking at Kosovo, what the outcome is that we want a country to become part of the community of nations, this region, which has a lot going for it. It's already got a hard currency and first used the Deutschmark, is now using the euro. It's been already part of the monetary system. It's trying to become a sovereign and responsible member of the community of nations. It will do that. It's a small economy, but it's not without resources. It does have some natural resources, the Trepča mining complex, less interesting perhaps, but its greatest asset is its people and the entrepreneurial spirit of the people, which is astonishing. The people are really incredibly determined to succeed, and their whole attitude is just, we're not asking for your help, we just want our hands untied so that we can do it ourselves. They don't even need us to get in the wagon, they just want everyone to get out of the way. They can do it. So there's a lot of optimism in the nation and in Kosovo that they can move things forward. They want to preserve the rule of law and create it. If you read their Declaration of Independence, it is so carefully caveated and balanced, and it's almost like a model of an idealized Declaration of Independence. It observes everybody's rights and tries to speak to all of the concerns of all of the people that have criticized this move toward independence. I think they're going to succeed. I have every confidence that they will, and that it will become a responsible member of Europe.
Just to talk in specifics about what's going to happen now as far as the United Nations is concerned, now that Kosovo has declared independence. We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that the UN essentially has been administering Kosovo since 1999, and now, as I understand it, there is a process now that has started that eventually will lead to the United Nations leaving. Some NATO troops are going to stay, are we now on track to having Kosovo and Kosovars take over the government of the country?
Over time, it will be a gradual transition. The transfer of authority from the United Nations to the European Union and to NATO is a very positive move. First of all, it asserts the geography of the region, the political geography. It's part of Europe. It's part of the North Atlantic area as well. So NATO and the EU have a deep vested interest in the success of everything in Kosovo, from the rule of law mission of the European Union, the standing up of viable courts and the equal protection under the law, to international security. All of those things are now invested in Europe and European institutions. That's a good thing and a very positive move. The membership in the United Nations is a secondary issue to that. And so they can go a lot longer without membership in the UN than they can without participation in European institutions. Those they need now, those they're getting now.
Is there some concern that we're going to see a problem involving ethnic Albanians who live in adjoining countries, or particularly, I guess I'm thinking about Montenegro and Macedonia, that they're going to want to in a sense, join and form some kind of larger Kosovo, and that's going to become an issue for, well, that would be an issue for Macedonia, would continue to be an issue for Serbia as well.
Right. The Preševo Valley in southern Serbia is also a question. So people are afraid of this. In all my time dealing with Kosovo, I never heard Kosovar leaders talk about a greater Albania. They don't want to be part of a greater Albanian project looking toward the country of Albania. Kosovo is better off than most of its neighbors. It is has always been financially very well off relative to the other areas populated by Albanians, and they've done very well for themselves. Why would they want to attach themselves to less successful organizations and geographic areas? There is no movement that I'm aware of to do that, it's something that is brought up, but I saw no evidence of it. I hear none today from the people that are responsible in Kosovo. So I think it's a red herring in the whole mix of things. Mm-hmm. They've even got a separate flag, finally. Mm-hmm. For many years, they used to wave the red flag with the black double-headed eagle of Albania. But it was a cultural rather than a political symbol. And Europeans and Americans, people across the globe, misunderstood that as being a political statement. It wasn't. It was cultural. They were asserting their Albanian identity as Albanians, but not as the political offspring of the country of Albania. And now they have a new political flag and seal, that kind of thing, which those things which are particularly for Kosovo, and that will help them differentiate themselves politically from other Albanian groups. It may be of interest to people in Preševo or in Macedonia or in Montenegro to assert that they want to be part of Kosovo, but Kosovo, I do not believe, has an interest in drawing them into that, into their sphere of influence. And they have, I don't think they have any geographic aspirations.
Our guest again in this kind of this part of Focus 580, Ambassador John Menzies. He is Dean of the Whitehead School of Diplomacy and International Relations at Seton Hall University, served as Chief of Mission at the U.S. Office in Kosovo, and also served as the U.S. Ambassador to Bosnia-Herzegovina from January 7 through December 15 of 1996. And we're talking about recent events in Kosovo, and questions are certainly welcome from people listening. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Is there reason to be concerned that there we might see some violence occurring between the two Kosovar populations, between those people who are ethnic Albanian and those people who are ethnic Serbs? There certainly has been in the past.
Yes, and I believe that there is always a potential for violence. Some of it is stimulated from external players, but I believe the intent of the government and the majority of the people, that is the Albanians, is to keep a very tight lid on violence. Some people want to prove that Albanians and Serbs can't live together, and they may be on the Albanian or the Serb side, and there will always be such people, but they do not reflect the mainstream of the vast majority who want to live normal lives and want their neighbors around them, and they don't care that their neighbors are different. So I think, yes, the potential is there. I do not believe it will certainly be, it will not be systematic on the part of the Albanian government or forces among the Albanian population. We've seen, however, the influx of some forces, some groups from the Serb side over time, and we don't know their intent, we don't know how much they're involved or if they're involved. I hope not, but the suspicion is there that they may try to stimulate violence from time to time. Certainly, it's easy to rent a crowd.
Hmm. Who, for now, this new Kosovo, the independent Kosovo, who now will be its most important allies, partners, whatever word you would like to use, both politically and economically?
Clearly it'll be the European Union. Mm-hmm. And it will be their immediate neighbors with whom they will ultimately do a great deal of trading. and they will have to cooperate very closely for issues such as the borders, the water rights, electricity, import-export of all kinds of goods and services. So it will be Europe first. Now, of course, the Kosovars love the United States. They appreciate what we did for them, and they give the United States the vast majority of credit for the end of the conflict and for their success now in establishing their independence, and rightly so. The U.S. gets a lot of credit. There was even a lot of loose talk back in the early days after the conflict of wanting to become a state of the United States. Of course, we disabused them of the notion they're very far away, they're part of Europe, not of the United States. But the friendship between the United States and the people of Kosovo is enormous, and that extends to all of the people of Kosovo, not just one ethnic group, all of them. We are a friend to all of the peoples in Kosovo. And I think most of the groups and most of the individuals who live there understand that. But they have to be part of Europe, and they will look to Europe for legal models, for economic models. They want to basically become assimilated into the European Union over time. They want their laws to be consonant and their trade practices. Everything they do has to be consonant with European Union standards. So Europe will play the largest role, and the friendship with the United States will persist.
We have someone else to talk with here in Urbana. Let's do that. Line one. Hello.
Good morning. I don't know if you have covered this before, but do you expect an independent Kosovo to eventually combine with Albania?
No, I addressed this a couple of minutes ago. I don't expect it to happen. There's no interest that I'm aware of among the Kosovar leadership for such an alliance to take place. They will always be friendly with Albania, but they don't seek a political union of any kind.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Go ahead, sir.
I just wanted to point out, David, I actually served in Bosnia from late October in 1994 through the end of 96. I was just I was sworn in as ambassador on the 5th of October 1995. It was just that the actual credentials were delivered on the 7th of January to the president of Bosnia. So I was there for longer time than appears in the record.
All right. Well, I certainly don't want to deny you any of the credit for service.
Just wanted to correct it.
For time served. Often, you know, we rely on various biographies that we find here and there, and sometimes they're good, and sometimes they're not quite as accurate as we would like. So.
That is technically correct, though. I delivered the papers on the 7th of January.
Well, you know, we talked a little bit earlier. You said, and I think probably rightly so, that one wants to be careful about talking about this being a defeat for Russia.
Yeah.
You have to, I suppose, here at some point it would be appropriate to talk a little bit about what this means in a larger sense. You said, in fact, that the people of Kosovo, those who supported independence, felt that they owed something to the United States. And I don't know if who was the first country to recognize the independent Kosovo, but I imagine the United States probably was one of the first to do that. It is the case that relations between Russia and the United States have been tense over the last couple of years, at least. So I find myself wondering in what way Kosovo was, in fact, an example of the Russians and the Americans kind of tossing elbows a little bit, this does it indeed reflect on the relationship between the governments of the United States and the government of Russia?
The relationship with Russia over Kosovo was somewhat tense. From the very beginning, the Russians took a small contingent of their forces, serving very constructively with us in Bosnia. They pulled that group out and took them through Serbia and sent them into Pristina, where they occupied the airport. And that was a very tense moment. And
enough said about that. So there was a good deal of tension, but we managed to work together with the Russians constructively in countless meetings on what the future of Kosovo and discussing how we addressed humanitarian issues and the reconstruction effort after the conflict. The Russians were a party to that. They were drawn in all the time. And we worked very closely with them. So I just want to set people's minds at ease about that. We've worked very constructively with the Russians. It has been a much more recent vintage that they've taken a more strident view and more pro-Belgrade view of what's going on in Kosovo, and that has not been constructive. And that's why I say they've suffered a major diplomatic and political defeat in this particular outcome.
We have another caller here to talk with. Let's do that. And the caller is here in Champaign County, where we are, line one. Hello.
Hi. I'll try to be diplomatic, and this is so complicated that I and nuanced that it's hard to approach it in some ways, but with those misgivings, I'll try. Earlier, you said that the bombings at Belgrade and Serbia were designed to, you know, address the problem of refugees and the whole complex problem. But actually, the dislocation that you talked about, 4 out of 5 Kosovars, many others in many other regions, was actually quite a bit accelerated by that.
No, that's not technically correct. The bombing was not related to refugees leaving their homes. We did not bomb any refugees out of their homes that I'm aware of.
I didn't suggest that. I'm sorry. I don't know if you're intentionally misunderstanding that. That isn't even very nuanced. I'm just saying that I think as a diplomat, perhaps that you would have considered that there were other possibilities for resolving this situation rather than bombing. And I just think that there should be, this is so much the party line, as it were, of the U.S., having a diplomat who was involved in this circumstance, I think there are many other dissenting opinions on this whole circumstance. I'm not feeling very well, so I don't think I'm going to do a very good job of conveying it, but to the host, I think there are quite a few other people that could give different representations of this whole period. Chalmers Johnson points out that Camp Bondsteel in Kosovo was an important part of U.S. talking about using people as pawns. It wasn't just Serbia that was doing that. The U.S. was you're claiming this victory, diplomatic victory against the Soviets, the Russians. That's repugnant to me. I'm not feeling like I'm doing. I think there are other people that can do a lot better job in conveying some of the complexities of this. It's not often treated, and it comes off as heretical and conspiracist. But I'm getting apoplectic here too, so I don't know if I've contributed anything. The book by Chomsky called "Kosovo: The Myth of Military Humanitarian Interventionism" is a good place to start if people want to see a different side.
Well, if I can just respond for a moment, the fact that the Serbs drove more people from their homes during the bombing than they had before does not in any way mitigate what went on before the bombing started. People were being killed in significant numbers. People were being repressed in significant numbers. People were being driven from their homes. They like to say that the fact that we bombed them is what led to the vast expulsions. It's absolutely untrue. Unless you think that was an appropriate response to commit genocide in response to us trying to stop them from doing what they'd started doing. The logic just does not hold up. That's a deliberate distortion of the history of the event and what took place on the ground. We cared very deeply for what was going on. We tried to spare everybody's lives that we could, even with the bombing. We never targeted human targets unless there were no alternative. We were trying to make it impossible for them to conduct a war. That's the way we always worked. It's what we did in Bosnia as well. We weren't going after units. We were trying to make it impossible for them to work together to conduct war. And so there's a lot of mythology that surrounds what happened. But having been an intimate part of that process, I believe the United States acted morally together with its allies to prevent worse crimes taking place. As one of my friends says, sometimes a military intervention is the least violent option. And this was one instance where we needed to intervene to prevent worse crimes from taking place. And I still believe that's true. There may be counter thoughts. I just don't think the argumentation holds up. We're talking about real events now, not theory. And I know what went on the ground.
Was there anything that you, in a sense, that would regret, that you think that now looking back that the United States made the wrong decision?
There were a couple of points where we should have done things differently. Very early on, we should have said there will be no return of Serb sovereignty, there will be no partition. If we had done that, there are hundreds of people that would be alive today that aren't. There would be thousands of people still in Kosovo that aren't. And it was a grave mistake on the part of the administration and its policy at the time. But that's purely historical at this point.
We have maybe about 2-3 minutes left. I guess I'm interested in just maybe returning for a moment to talk a little bit about Serbia.
Yes.
And about what's happening politically in Serbia and what's likely here to happen in the coming weeks. There's going to be another election. What had been a previous government, a coalition government, that seemed to be divided on a lot of issues, and maybe one of the big ones was indeed which way the country was going to ally itself, whether it was going to move closer to Europe or whether it was going to move closer to Russia. And what happens with Kosovo no doubt has something to do with that. I guess I'm just curious about what you think is likely to happen here in the near term in Serbia.
I think we're going to see a continuing struggle between the two forces, the ones that want to move west and the ones that want to move east, politically and perhaps literally. And I think that process is going to continue. I think I'm hopeful, though, that the ones who want to be part of Europe will win out. And we don't know who they are always. I truly believe that there are very few people that are permanent enemies. I think that we can work with people and bring them around over time. So I believe that this constant engagement with them will be productive. I wish we'd done this in other parts of the world, with Syria, with Iran, and other countries. Remain engaged. Remain always in dialogue with them. If they don't already have better angels, then we should provide them. And I think that's what we need to do with Serbia, to not give up on them, but to always be engaged with them in dialogue and trying to find constructive ways of working together.
Mm-hmm. And again, just to come around to the subject that we have spent a lot of time talking about and began with, it is your belief that eventually in time that most of the rest of the world, including Russia and Serbia, will come to accept, they might not be very happy, but would come to accept the idea of an independent Kosovo.
I believe that will happen. I think it's virtually inevitable.
And in the meantime, though, is there uncertainty about the status of the country?
Only in a technical sense, with the United States, with our key allies already recognizing the independence of the country, the status is virtually sure, and I think literally sure. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go back in a different direction. It's already done. The divorce decree is there, and Kosovo is going to move forward.
We do have one more caller here. We'll squeeze him in the time that remains in Gibson City, line one. Hello.
Yes, hello. And, well, I'm sorry I didn't hear all the program, but I guess I'm calling in regard to bombing, and not just in Kosovo, but I think we in general should not be bombing. I think it's immoral. I think bombing should not be done, and I think that when people choose bombing, our government, it's the civilians that suffer. And I think as human beings and as a moral person, I just think that we've got to find better ways. And I don't want to pick on you, but I guess I just felt like I had to say that bombing is wrong. And I'll hang up and listen. But I do thank you for what you do and what you try to do.
Well, I appreciate the perspective. No one wants to bomb. We never approach international relations as bombing. International relations, diplomacy is all about relationships of trust between people. It always comes down to individual relationships of trust. And it is only the gravest exceptions that lead to military violence and military force. And no one wants to bomb anyone else. And I can tell you this, that we made every effort to find diplomatic solutions in Bosnia and in Kosovo. We could not find any. And eventually, as we saw the killing going on, if you'd lived in Sarajevo and seen people sniped, if you'd had friends gunned down and shot down, you would understand perhaps better what it means to live under siege, and that civilians killing civilians in detail is just a terrible, terrible thing to witness. When we bombed, as I said, we tried to take the eyes and ears away from the Serb military so they could not conduct military operations. And we tried everything we could to inflict a minimum of human casualties. We never tried to hit things that would have collateral damage or would put civilians at risk. You cannot always be accurate. You can not always be perfect. But we did everything we could. And in my view, violence is always a very late resort, but sometimes unavoidable.
We will have to leave it there. Our guest is John Menzies. He's dean of the Whitehead School of Diplomacy and International Relations at Seton Hall University and former U.S. ambassador to Bosnia-Herzegovina. Ambassador Menzies, thank you very much.
Thank you, David. It's been a real pleasure.